podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Sean McDonald of the Blethered podcast. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me. Big fan. I've been listening for years, so glad to be on.
No, it's a real pleasure. And we're doing it remotely. We would have been doing this in person, but obviously the whole world has been thrown into disarray. How are you dealing with the lockdown, Sean?
Day by day, I think. You know, kind of trying to keep busy at times with work. I've got some gym equipment I can use at the back. That's kind of keeping me a wee bit focused. But as we were saying earlier off air, there's no precedent to it. So I think it is just taking it day by day and not trying to look too far ahead and just keeping in the house and keeping away from everybody, really.
It definitely is. And what I've been thinking a lot about over the last couple of weeks in isolation is the importance, really, of alternative media. But the flip side of that as well, Sean, is I believe that, you know, mainstream media has become relevant again for the first time in quite some time because everybody is tuning in to the news for their updates. But let's have a wee chat about alternative media. How important is it these days for people like yourself and I to get some equipment together and to get podcasts out there and get their creativity flowing? How important has that been for you?
I think obviously we're all under no illusion now that every mainstream media channel, regardless of where it comes from, is obviously working to its own agenda. So it is important to hear other voices, normal voices, voices that are only working to editors or sub-editors or to, you know, a sort of wider intent, so to speak. But I think it's also, you know, it's more relevant, you know, especially if we're going to talk about in terms of Celtic alternative media. Obviously, club media is going to be pretty biased. You know, you're not going to get any sort of real level of objectivity. And it is important to hear these voices. And, it also challenges, I suppose, the mainstream media to be better. You know, if there is no alternative, then they can kind of play by their own rules and set their own standards. But when you've got, you know, people providing and creating more original things, it sort of raises the standard, so to speak. So I think it is very important. And obviously in this time as well, you know, we're all looking for constant entertainment. You know, I'm bumming through podcasts, I'm bumming through everything, you know, because there's not really much else to do. So it's probably going to play a big part in keeping people sane and entertained as well.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, back in the day, you know, the Celtic View was this official vehicle for Celtic to put their voice across. And again, I think a big part of that was so that they could control the narrative from the media around about that time. And it worked really well. But in time, it became what was called by the fanzines Pravda, because it became almost like a propaganda you know, vehicle. And then the fanzines came in and they were kind of buckling that trend. They were funny. They were risky. They could basically cover any subject they wanted. And then as we move into the new media era, we've got this influx of podcasts. And I look around the Celtic alternative media landscape at the moment, and it's very, very healthy. I mean, it's up there with probably the biggest clubs in England. It probably competes with them, to be fair. I mean, how impressed are you with the Celtic guys out there doing some incredible work on a daily and weekly basis?
Oh, unbelievably so. I mean, I'm a massive fan of 20 Minute Tim's. Really enjoy Celtic State of Mind, even in the sort of earlier days of Celtic Underground, and hearing these interviews. So I think St. Anthony, who would be doing Celtic Underground, they're constantly speaking to people. For example, while I might not agree with every single thing he says, hearing John Fallon speaking so candidly and frankly, it's just something that you would never, ever hear say, obviously, coming out of the club in a million years. You know, there's various other ones. I even really enjoyed the Desert Island Tims. I discovered that quite a few years ago, and I bummed through all of those. And I think it is, as you say, the humour and the creativity and the originality. But even that, you know, I love your ones with, like, Brian McClair, and they just speak a lot more openly than they would, obviously, if they're speaking to the club, because they're not towing the party line. I've been really, really impressed. But then again, for me, everything that's connected to Celtic, Celtic fans, there always is an element of originality and brilliance. When you look at, you know, the well-known Celtic fans, you've got Billy Connolly straight off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Our pals across the city, I don't think have got that originality. And there's, I can't remember the phrase, but there's something that was said that humour and creativity is born out of a need to express against, you know, a form of oppression. I don't mean to take it too deep, but when you're not the establishment, then you sort of have to push back a lot more. And I think that does shine through in the Celtic media that we've got.
I totally agree with you. I mean, some of the guests we've had on the Celtic State of Mind show are just unbelievable, from comedy to literature, film, music. And, you know, I've always thought there definitely is an intrinsic link between that creativity and Celtic fans, the fan base at Celtic. And a big thing that I always loved, particularly about the fanzines, was Celtic fans were not afraid to laugh at themselves and at the club, because back in the 90s, we had to laugh because we were so bad, you know. But I don't think you get that humour from other sections of Glasgow Football Club supports. I don't think you get that. They're too uptight and take themselves too seriously. There's a big establishment thing, as you say. They just feel as though they're superior. But Celtic fans can have a right good laugh, and I think that's still there. I think that's still prevalent. And we're really, really well served with the Celtic alternative media guys. And I've actually got an idea that we should maybe do something once this all settles down, where there's a crossover. I think that would be quite funny to actually have some of the 20-Minute Tims guys on a Celtic State of Mind. I mean, for me, that'd be a good coming together of minds. That actually would be quite enjoyable. So hopefully we'll do something along those lines. You know what I mean, Sean?
I think that would be absolutely excellent, because you've obviously both got your distinct styles in terms of presenting and the way that you speak and put yourselves across and create the shows, but there is obviously that shared objective and that shared element of, you know, bringing that form of media. I think that would be excellent, so I'm going to push for you to make that happen now.
Oh, that would be good, particularly, you know, once we're allowed to leave the house, it'll be so welcome, Sean, just to meet another human being, you know.
Forgetting what it's like.
Oh, honestly, I mean, you were talking there about some of the things you do maybe to try and give yourself a routine, and I'm the same here, working on a podcast, trying to keep some kind of physical exercise regime, and it's so important. I know that you cover the subject of mental health quite a bit on your own podcast, which we'll speak about, mm-hmm. Sean. What are some of the challenges that you think that a lot of people, not only those who are already suffering from mental health issues, but just, you know, the normal person who's been thrown into this mire of uncertainty, what kind of things would you suggest, you know, from your end, could be done to maybe help them through it?
I actually said yesterday one thing that I would recommend is, there's a book by a guy called Eckhart Tolle, and it's called The Power of Now, which basically, I mean, I'm trying to paraphrase a really deep, profound and extensive piece of writing in one sentence, but I will attempt it. And it's basically, it's just on the focus of, don't be looking too far ahead into the future, because you don't really know what's coming, and technically it doesn't exist. Don't be looking too far back into the past or focusing living there, because that also doesn't exist. So all you've got really is the here and now. So it's a cliche, but you have to really take each day at a time. And if you're breaking into one day, you know, if you're to look and say, right, I've got 3 months to fill up or to occupy, that's really daunting and it seems insurmountable. But if you break that down and it's just one day, so all you have to do is focus, wake up that day, right, what are you going to do? Something that's going to benefit you, if you can, maybe a bit of exercise. Enjoy the time, you know. I don't think we're ever going to get, unless this pandemic strikes again, we're never really going to get another opportunity to sit in your arse and watch Still Game or old Celtic games, guilt-free, and nobody can say anything to you. And, you know, you can sit on the couch, so do that. I would say just accept it. So, sorry, I'm kind of running away from myself here. So I'd say a day at a time. Just accept it, you know, be sort of guilt-free about it. And I suppose keeping in contact with others, because the isolation is going to be quite difficult, especially if people aren't used to it. And I suppose it is the unknown. We don't know what's coming. That can be quite daunting for people, but it will pass. We will come out the other side of it, and hopefully, you know, we'll all be a lot better served for it, and we'll take less things for granted. That's what I'm hoping for myself anyway.
Without a doubt. And as you said there, try and look for some kind of opportunities, some kind of positive opportunities. A lot of the things that I'm doing now, I would certainly not have the time to do them, Sean. And that's down to the fact that we're all in isolation. So it's a book that I'm going to have to check out. And again, because I may well have the opportunity to do that. So thanks for the recommendation there.
I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the creativity among Celtic fans. I also think looking at some of the guests we've had on A Celtic State of Mind, of the same kind of era, contemporaries, if you like, yourself, we've had Chris McQueer on, Paul Dockery's been on, there seems to be a real kind of hub creativity around about your area yourself, Sean. When did you decide it was time to set up your own podcast and get your own voice out there and actually bring people together and then do your own interview and get it out? Because it's been a huge success since you launched it.
It's been going well and I've really, really enjoyed it. I suppose the idea came around about October 2018 because one of my, just out of the blue, one of my pals said I should do it and I dismissed it. Even though I would describe myself as a voracious consumer of podcasts, you know, it's probably my most consumed media. But I kind of dismissed it, but he planted the seed. And then I thought, there is a few things I would like to talk about or I would like to discuss. And it kind of just grew to there. Started in January, late January 2019. It was Chris McQueer that gave me the idea for the name, actually, so I have to give him credit for that. Mm-hmm. And it just went from there. And, you know, I didn't really have any major intent for it. I just thought, I'll just do this and see if people want to talk. And then from there, it did grow and it kind of it gained a bit of an identity and a bit of a structure. And I just decided to keep carrying it on. But it's definitely been something I've really enjoyed.
I'm just looking through some of the incredible guests you've had on there, and it always intrigues me because I love the interview process myself, Sean. That everything I've ever done has been kind of built around interviews, from the books to documentary, and then obviously the podcast. Talk to us about some of the experiences you've had and some of your most memorable moments of speaking to all these incredible guests that you've had on.
Aye, so it grew. It's just grown really organically. You know, I've never got in touch with people and offered fees. I was really close to getting Paul Merson until he kind of wanted paid for it, and I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I can't manage that. So I think the way that it's grown organically and the way that the introductions have been made naturally have really helped benefit. You know, the way that it's done and the sort of the rapport I'm able to build up. Like, I suppose one of the biggest was Jim White. He was excellent. We got introduced and he was really lovely about it and invited me down to his place in London. Mm-hmm. We had a really good conversation, so I hope to get a part two with that. Mary Black was really interesting, sort of getting her take on Westminster. And I suppose on the other side of that table would be Paul Sweeney, MP. He was the Shadow Minister for Scotland for the Labour government until he lost his seat in the most recent election. They were really good. I'm trying to think who else I've had on there. Toby Tarrant is great fun. He's become quite a good pal. He's the son of Chris Tarrant. He's the mid-morning presenter for Radio X. Yeah. Gordon Smart's become a really good pal. He recently did Cy Ferry's show. We had a really good chat. Trying to get that part two done, but he's the busiest guy in the world. But overall, it's just been really great, and I've loved the way that they've all come about really naturally, and there's always been a wee bit of a relationship beforehand, which really does help. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you sit down to do an interview, you know that yourself better than anybody.
Absolutely. I mean, it was really interesting to hear that Gordon Smart's writing a book about, you know, bumping into people when you're at the urinals. Because
by the way, tell you, see the story. So see if you get an eye out with Gordon in London. It is mental. We're sitting in the Groucho, which is a club in Soho. And every famous person that walks by, I would go, bloody hell, there's such and such. And they come straight over to the table wanting to talk to him. You know, he's worked with the showbiz segments that he's done in media, has obviously made him very well known. And, you know, he's gotten to know a lot of people. But I think the best thing about him is he's such a nice guy that people then, you know, they don't just use him for the ticket or where they can maybe get him or for the exposure he can provide. But it's much, even we were walking down Carnaby Street and we bumped into somebody talking to them, and then it's, who is that? Oh, that's Amy Winehouse's manager before she died. It's just caught non-stop. He's the most famous guy in London, I swear to God. So I'm looking forward to reading that book whenever he gets it finished.
It sounds like a great concept. He better not ever lose his phone, that's for sure, because his contact book, he must be, you know, one of the best you'll ever have seen. It will have Bono and Noel Gallagher and all those kind of guys in it.
Well, 100%, I've got the knowledge that Noel Gallagher is the worst for sending mental WhatsApp. Now everybody's got somebody that sends mental videos on WhatsApp. Like, you'll get stuff that would get you to jail. So Noel Gallagher's the worst culprit for that. So he definitely can't lose his phone. There'll be a lot of people in trouble. I suppose the same as anybody's WhatsApp media.
It is interesting. And the reason I mentioned that urinals, because bizarrely enough, the most famous person I've ever been standing at a urinal next to is Gordon Smart. And it was in a miners' welfare club in Crossgates in Fife. because obviously his wife is Jim Leishman's daughter. And
they were
both at a mutual friend's 30th birthday party, so it is bizarre, but he comes across so well, does Gordon.
Great guy.
Going back a wee bit yourself, Sean, I always talk about my upbringing as a Celtic fan through the 80s and the kind of early 90s, and I'm guessing you're quite a wee bit younger than myself. What's your early memories of your Celtic introduction?
So earliest memories, I suppose, since I could speak, I knew I was a Celtic supporter. I knew my name, my age, where I was from and what team I supported. But I can't say I had any great knowledge of the team. My first real distinct memory was getting my first hoops strip for my fifth birthday. And I remember just being elated, so I know that it was definitely something that I really felt deep within myself. In terms of the first game that I remember, it was actually the 5-1 against Rangers in November 1998. I don't remember much detail for the game itself, but I do remember sort of celebrating it that night and being really happy. And I suppose from then on, that was when I started to really take notice of what happened. I think the reason there was a bit of, it maybe took me until that long, is because I lived in England from the age of 5 until 8. So we didn't have sports scene, we didn't have Sky TV or anything like that. So exposure was limited to when I came back up the road. You know, I get sent on my Celtic strips and all that. Mm-hmm. I think the first season where I really knew what was going on and I was taking everything in was John Barnes' season, which obviously started really well and then obviously completely disintegrated into chaos after that. And then from there on, though, I was really lucky because my next season was the treble under Mark Moneal, at which point I remember thinking, we must just beat Rangers 6-2 all the time and win the league by 15 points. Didn't quite turn out to be that way every year. But it was definitely a golden period in which I was really inducted, if you want to call it, into the watching Celtic.
Great memory, Sean. I had a discussion with Stevie from St Rocks a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the greatest Celtic manager of our lifetime, and he mentioned O'Neill, and it was right down to the fact that when you look at the percentage of trophies, and in particular the league championships that we've won since O'Neill came in, that period mm-hmm. of domination really did start again with Martin O'Neill. And I do actually remember, though, the John Barnes thing, like you say, that there was a real optimism to begin with, and you know, we're beating Aberdeen 7-0 and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it nosedived really, really quickly afterwards. But again, we came out quickly after that, and it worked out well. We're getting Martin O'Neill into the manager's chair. You're talking about trebles. We're basically on a treble, and we were going for a quadruple treble. How amazing have the last few years been for you as well, Sean?
Oh, absolutely incredible, especially after, as much as I love him, the Ronnie Dyler era was obviously wasn't it great. I mean, actually, strangely, I don't know why I put myself through this, but I watched the highlight of the semi-final against Ross County when they beat us 3-1, and it really did hammer home to me, you know, that things, we were quite stagnant, you know, things just weren't great, and it's just been an absolute pleasure. You know, the first treble, the invincible treble, you just thought, this can't get any better, to go and do it at the second time, then the third. Obviously, we were on course to do it for the fourth. I think we would have, and I still hope that we do. I still hope we get to play it out. But it's just been absolutely incredible, and just not taking it for granted. I know there is the accusation, which I do understand sometimes, that the younger generation will take this a bit for granted, but I can remember, you know, highs and lows over the last 20 years, and it's just been incredible. And I think in years to come, if things maybe go back to quote-unquote normal, then we'll really look back and realise how special it was just to be taken everything in sight.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. It would be difficult, I guess, if you were born into an environment where, you know, we won the league every year and at least one cup, maybe two. I mean, that would be difficult then to think of a different situation. But
I know.
All these things come to pass. That the big question that I've been asking over the last couple of weeks, Sean, is what will Scottish football look like if and when we do get back to normality? Because we're speaking to David Lowe, and David just looks at the financials, really, the financial aspect of Scottish football and Celtic specifically. And there is a question as of, you know, how many of these clubs are strong enough to come through it? Will this pave the way for Celtic to play the football somewhere else? And in all honesty, the big question would be, is that something that you would be happy with? I mean, it's going to be a situation out of our hands, I guess. There's going to be a lot mm-hmm. of clubs going to the wall and people losing their jobs, which is, you know, really, the ground level, that's the saddest thing, people losing their jobs. But
yeah.
If, for example, there is a situation where Celtic and the size of the club that they are, that they have built themselves to be over, the period since McCann took over on a business level. Would there be an opportunity, do you see, Sean, for Celtic to play their football elsewhere?
I think there could be an opportunity because obviously clubs are going to have self-preservation or self-promotion as their main, you know, modus operandi in terms of how they're, you know, making these decisions. I'm a real traditionalist, and I think when you look back at, you know, games like when we won the league against Motherwell at Firth Park, was it 60? Would it have been 65 in Jock Stein's first season?
That's right, yeah.
Or you look at, you know, the cup finals of 85 or 88 in the centenary season, and these incredible memories, like, you know, coming up against Jim McLean's Dundee United and Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen. And I think there would be something really, really, really sad about losing that tradition. You know, our league isn't the best. You know, isn't the best football. The stadiums aren't the greatest, but our league is our league. And I think it's kept its soul. And that's what I absolutely love. I always say, hand on heart, I would rather watch a mid-table Scottish Premiership game than I would watch your average English game. And I'm not trying to be... sort of deliberately disparaging towards the English game or talking rubbish and saying, no, I would rather watch Kilmarnock against Motherwell than I would Man U, Man City. That's not always the case, but for the most part I would, because it's our game and it really has kept it so, because it's people are coming here for the glitz and the glamour, for it that way. And I just think there would be something really, really sad about that if those fixtures were no more and if they were consigned to the history books. Obviously, for a football perspective, from a boozy away weekend or away day perspective, it would be really exciting to be coming up against European clubs, and we could see, you know, a real influx or injection of finance, which could in turn see is able to, you know, improve the playing personnel. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it always completely comes down to the football, because or the game that's played on the park, or the team that we've got in the park, because as we know, Celtic is so much more than that. And I just to keep repeating my point, I would be really, really gutted if that was the end of those fixtures and they were just historical things that we look back on.
Mm-hmm. It could well go the other way, whereby it's a great leveller and the big leagues who have basically, the gap has got wider and wider and wider, that shortens, you know, because it's going to, there's mm-hmm. clubs in the top division in England at the moment talking about they're going to struggle beyond August if this situation doesn't resolve itself. And I look back on English football during the 80s, Sean. Basically, English football was great because you had a real core of Scottish players that went down there and you would follow them, even the likes of Strachan going down to Man United and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And you would read about these clubs in the Shoot magazine and in Match magazine and that type of thing. And the Panini stickers were big back then, and you'd know all about the English game. When the Sky TV money came in the early 90s, it was exciting. You know, the influx of people like Georgia Kinkladze, Tony Yeboah, Eric Cantona, it was great. But then it just got too big and it just, you know, it disappeared into the distance. And I think you used the correct term there. It lost its soul. You didn't care about it anymore, the English game. I don't watch English football, and I kind of gave up on it some time ago. But I care. I really do care about Scottish football. So I think the best possible outcome would be that things level out and the big, let's say, five or six leagues aren't as far away as they were becoming. And then the obnoxious kind of money that people were being paid as well, Sean, comes down to a more realistic level. I think that's important.
Right.
You know, because... It did get to the point where Celtic, there's no way. I mean, that's where you look at the Lazio games this season. I was going to say last season there, but this season, the two Lazio games. What an incredible achievement that was, because we really did go toe-to-toe with a team that if we hadn't beaten them a couple of times, they would have progressed in that tournament further, you know. So I think my next question would be the Neil Lennon effect. I spoke to Danny McGrain recently, and Danny has coached Celtic from Wim Jansen right up to today. And I was asking him about, you know, the differences between the coaches and the managers. And, you know, he didn't rate one of them, but I won't say who it was. But he was comparing Brendan Rodgers to Neil Lennon, and he thought they were both excellent coaches. He says, but you know, the problem is Neil Lennon's not as fashionable, as charismatic and all of these things, maybe in front of a camera than Brendan Rodgers, but he's as good a coach as Brendan Rodgers. And I thought, coming for Danny McGrain, who's now been coaching for 23 years at Celtic Park, I thought, you know, I've got to take that. I'm in agreement. I'm a massive Lenny fan. What kind of change have you seen since his first tenure? You were talking about Ronnie Dyla. Just before Ronnie took over, there's Neil Lennon, and comparing him to now, what do you think the differences are?
I think in terms of his temperament, he's definitely more measured. You know, I called him when he was appointed. I said for the second time, I said actually after the cup final, I was saying that his emotional volatility and his lack of sometimes being able to control that temperament could really come back to bite us at a time when it really is pivotal. There can't be too much emotion appointed to the fact that when Fergus McCann was appointing, when he appointed Wim Jansen, they insisted it wasn't to be a British coach because they couldn't have any awareness or pressures of, you know, what it all meant. And I kind of had a similar concern when Neil was being appointed, but I think he's proven me wrong, and I'm absolutely delighted to be proven wrong. He seems to have mellowed, which I suppose does happen with age. He's obviously a fiery character, and as much as you don't want him to lose that, you want that to be tempered, to be controlled a bit. In terms of the football, you know, I think we're playing even better football. We always did play attacking football under him that first time, but it's so free-flowing. I like that he's adapting his system, that we've seen us playing that 3-5-2 at times. And I think he's just been experienced. You know, I suppose it said, if a manager fails five seasons in a row, he's then going to be a much better manager at the end of that. You know, yearly success. I'm not saying Lennon has failed at any point, but any failings or harsh lessons that he's had have obviously gone on to ultimately benefit him and help him become, you know, a lot more rounded as a manager and probably as a man. And it can only benefit us. And I'm delighted now that we've got him, because I'll hold my hands up and say I was completely deflated when he was appointed after the Scottish Cup final in May, just past last year. So I think he's definitely a much more rounded and improved manager than we had the first time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Sean. I'm looking at where we are Scottish football wise. I'd gone up to Celtic Park to pick my ticket up for Ibrox on the Friday, and I was just waiting, you know, for the announcement that the game was going to be called off. It left everybody in limbo. We've heard everybody's theories about what should happen. Should the game be called off completely and Celtic awarded the title? Is there a way of playing the games behind closed doors? What do you see as the best outcome in relation to what happens this season? And if and when Celtic are awarded the title, Sean, how on earth are we all going to celebrate when we're in isolation? Because we're going to have to be creative there, aren't we?
I know. Well, I think from a Celtic fans or from a football fans perspective, I would like to see it played out in front of the fans, as I think everybody would be. But we have to be pragmatic about it. If that's not going to be possible, you know, if this lockdown continues for months, then we have to look at alternatives. I suppose then for me, the next best option would be play the game behind closed doors, because one, I would like to see us winning. I think that we're completely capable of it. And two, I can't be bothered, as much as I don't pay attention to the noises coming from elsewhere, I can't be bothered listening to the fish, to be honest, about how it's tainted or it's 8.5. I would rather just go and play it. But it seems to me to only be one team that wants to have the league completely scrapped, you know, null and void, but that's probably another conversation. But I think, again, from a sensible point of view, if it has to be called, now if there's teams that are relying on income and they need it very soon unless they're going to go to the wall, I would imagine that the league would have to be called in order for prize money and TV money or sponsorship money to be paid out in full. Mm-hmm. And it may come down to that, because if it's a, you know, if it's a call between teams going bust and teams not, then they're going to have to make some sort of decision. Ideally, we'll see it being played out. I would take behind closed doors. What's your stance on that? Because I would take behind closed doors if it came to it.
I was thinking that it could be done. I remember just a couple of weeks back talking about, you know, the actual process of setting up a game. Would it really need to be in a stadium the size of Celtic Park in relation to a game, as long as the dimensions of the pitch are correct and you've got the right mm-hmm. staff there? Behind closed doors, for me, would be the best option. I was reading this morning about the preparation for the players to get up to speed and all that might be difficult. But I just think, I'm like yourself, every single thing Celtic have won, they've won it fair and square. You know, there's never been mm-hmm. a question about it. And I just don't think that when people are starting to talk about asterisks and all this kind of stuff, Sean, you think, wow. I mean, talk about a lack of self-awareness, you know.
But, oh my God, I know.
But I would, if possible. But again, I'm like everyone else. I'm looking at the pandemic and how it's developing, and in particular in this country, and how it's been managed or not, as the case may be. And it's just looking at, there's no way we can come back to this in August, let's say, or September. So you're looking at June and July, and are you able to do it well? I think it is possible. And like you say, they've had that summit, all the clubs were represented, and they will have discussed at that point just how critical it's going to be for a number of the clubs if the prize money isn't paid out. So I think you're right, and just hoping that it comes to a decision fairly soon rather than everybody being in limbo. And then we need to try and figure out, as I say, Sean, how's the Celtic fans going to celebrate worldwide? I'm looking forward to this online frenzy when it happens, you know?
I know. It'd be absolutely amazing. I suppose, depending on your area where you live, you could maybe have a wee back garden party and get some neighbours out, but you're going to have some people that are definitely the same mindset as you. Otherwise, it would descend into chaos. But no, I'm sure we'll find a way. As you say, we've just spoke about how creative and ingenious Celtic supporters can be, so we'll definitely find a way to mark such a momentous thing. But hopefully we're back out by that point. But again, it's anybody's guess, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, Sean, you're very active on social media, and obviously your podcast has been a huge success, getting some really big figures and big numbers as well. Have you any aspirations yourself, Sean, to expand on that? Have you thought about moving into maybe more mainstream media, or what does the future hold for Blethered itself? Are you going to move that into maybe video interviews and that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that I've considered. Over the past year, people have been approached by some companies or some people that have wanted to collaborate. And as much as I said, that would be great and I would really like to do that in the future. But at this point, I'm just trying to just refine my craft a wee bit and just become a more accomplished interviewer. I didn't want to rush it. Anything that I'm doing or I've created, it's not been for plaudits, it's not been for money, and it's not been for recognition. It really has just been for enjoyment. So I thought, right, just go at the pace you're going at just now, and keep getting better, keep developing in that sense. Because I just bought a mic one day and just started interviewing people. So there was a steep learning curve, I suppose. But I would really like to be doing video interviews, because it's obviously another form of media. It's reaching another audience, because not everybody consumes podcasts. Some people prefer to sit and watch it on YouTube or whatever. There's a couple of other things I've been doing with some other networks that have been quite interesting, which will be more mainstream, and I'll just kind of let those happen at their own pace. But I'm definitely looking to expand and even changing up the types of shows. You know, I'm starting a music show in conjunction or collaboration with a very well-known concert promoter. And that will be speaking to bands, interviewing them, and having them play a wee bit of live music as well, which is something a wee bit different from me. And a few other things, but I've really enjoyed it. So as much as I like to let things happen naturally, I'm looking forward to, right, how can I diversify a wee bit and reach some other areas.
Well, it does sound as though once you have that concept or idea, Sean, you'll go and achieve it. Looking just on your social media, you've obviously, at a young age, decided to flee the nest, as it were, and go over to Barcelona and learn Spanish. What was the circumstances behind that? That's a huge move for one so young.
It was a big thing at the time. And the funny thing is, at the time, the reason I moved is because I felt as if, oh no, I've not achieved anything. So I was 22. I was working in finance in Glasgow, and I just started getting the itch, really. And it is actually straightforward. I Googled work abroad, and I thought, right, I'll see what comes up. And the first thing I saw was to teach English in Barcelona. I applied for it. Long story short, 4 weeks later, there I was. I'd left my flat, left my job, and kind of turned up, pitched up there. And I just kind of went with the intention of, I'm not coming back until I've made something of myself. I actually didn't really have much intention of coming back, to be honest. You know, personal circumstances change, and I was really happy to do that. But I just kind of wanted some sort of adventure. You know, I learned Spanish really quickly, but I speak Catalan and French and Italian as well, just as a result of being out there and kind of forcing myself to go and learn it. I was really fortunate that I lived with Spanish Catalan people for about a year and a bit, and they spoke zero English, so it helped me in the sense that I was hearing them speaking all the time, because people always ask me, how do you learn so fast? And I would say immersion, just complete immersion is your first best option if you're able to get that. It's obviously not the case for everybody. I had some great years. I still consider it home, to be honest, as much as Glasgow. I was supposed to be going over, but that's not going to be happening for a wee while, obviously, with the travel ban. But the best thing ever, but it completely made me.
It's brilliant, and as I say, I take my hat off to you, Sean, because I'm a home bird. I'm still sitting in the town in which I was born, so there you go. Recording my podcast. However, It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you about Blethered. If anyone out there who hasn't heard Sean in action, please check him out on his podcast Blethered, which has been massively successful and has had quite a lot of the guests that we've spoken about today. Another one that interested me actually was Edith Bowman, because I'm sure she's a fellow Fifer. I think she's from Anstruther.
She is, aye, from Anstruther. Edith was lovely. We had a good laugh with Gordon in Glasgow. Aye, that was great. No, I forgot Edith. I should have mentioned her. She's probably one of the biggest names. No, she was lovely.
Listen, Sean, you take care until the next time, and hopefully once we're allowed, we can maybe meet up and do this again.
Definitely, I hope so, Paul. Thanks a lot, mate.
No bother. You take care. Cheers, then.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you.
Network.